Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. I am so excited to have you here with us today, and you know, this is an exciting time to be in business. It's an exciting time to be a business owner. It's an exciting time to be involved in small business. It's just a whole lot of fun. But one of the things that small business owners in particular face these days, and it's such a challenge, is hiring people or, you know, even if they're contractors, engaging services of people that can help you grow your business. And these days, of course, we all know that the hiring pool has expanded tremendously. There are very young people in the market that might not otherwise have been in the market for a job with a small business because the job market is, you know, changed so much. There are baby boomers and beyond in the market because of the economy and just simply because people at all age levels just want to remain active and involved in doing something fun. And it can be just, you know, a quagmire of details to sort through. So to help us as small business owners handle all of these challenges when it comes to dealing with people that we engage with and hire at work, we've got some experts with us today. They are Megan Johnson and her dad, Larry Johnson, and they are the co-authors of Generations, Inc., From Boomers to Linksters, Managing the Friction Between Generations at Work. Megan Johnson and Larry Johnson are a father-daughter team, and they are the Johnson Training Group, whose clients include American Express, Harley-Davidson, Nordstrom, Dairy Queen, and many others. Both authors are noted public speakers on the subjects of generations in the workplace, as well as corporate culture and other management challenges. Welcome to the show, Larry and Megan.
Thanks, Donna. Well,
thanks, Donna.
I'm just really...
Hey, there you are.
Guys here. There you are. So listen, let's just kick things off with a little bit of context. One of the things that you guys were fabulous enough to send to me is this wonderful generational decoder card. And I thought that would be a wonderful place to get started so we would be able to have a look and a broad overview look at the different categories of age groups that we're talking about here. Megan, can you tell us a little bit about that so we have that context as we start our discussion?
Well, we've got four, soon to be five generations in the workforce. They're the traditional generation. Those are people born before 1945. They're the smallest segment of the workforce right now. They're about 8%. They could be, if in your organization, they could be some volunteers. They could be some people that are working part-time, or they could be the founder of your organization. Then we have baby boomers. As I like to tell my dad, who's a baby boomer, they just keep Botoxing themselves back into the workforce. And they were born between 1946 and 1964, and they are definitely the largest generation. They're not retiring. They're still staying in the workforce. And then there's Generation X, my generation, people born between 1965 and 1980. And we're actually the smallest segment. We're 13%, and we're small, but we're mighty, is what I tell my audiences. Then we have Generation Y. Those are people born between 1980 and 1995. They're quite a large generation, and they are also the offspring of baby boomers. And then just a few, little sprinkling of the Linkster generation, and those are people born after 1995. And they are living at home. They're working part-time. They're the ones making your half-calf, decaf soy latte every morning when you go to a coffee place or you're buying your movie tickets from them at the movie theater. And those are the five generations that we've got going right now.
So is it fair to say that this is the first time in recent history that we've had so many different generations that are viable in the workforce at one time?
That would be more than fair to say. That is definitely the truth. We've never had so many generations working so closely together. And part of that is because people are having children later in life, and also people are staying healthy and active, and part of being active is staying in the workforce, and also there's economic reasons.
There's also the reality that as we move ahead with budget problems in the government, there's a good chance that the retirement age is going to be pushed back anyway, so that maybe not my generation, but those older Xers and young boomers that are coming behind me, they may have to wait until they're 66 or 68, 70 to collect their Social Security.
longer in the workforce longer. So, Larry, tell me this. As small business owners, which is, of course, who we're talking with today, I mean, it seems like it's a fantastic opportunity for us to be able to leverage this for a win-win situation all around. Is that what you're seeing?
Well, I think that you can certainly have it right now as a small business owner, and as your business is picking up and you're hiring, you certainly have a wider selection to choose from. And especially with the young people coming up today, there are, I guess you'd say, pros and cons to that generation, just like every generation. And one of the pros is that they're probably the best educated and most sophisticated, especially technology-wise, of any generation to appear on Earth. You know, for the first time, probably in history, the older generation in the workplace is not nearly as cognizant of technical kinds of things as the younger generation. So here we are, we're needing them to mentor us. So you may need to hire some young people to come in just to get your older folks up to speed.
So, Larry and Megan, let's talk for a second about a small business owner who is transitioning their business from them doing pretty much everything to hiring their first employee. And they're looking at, you know, these different types of generations that we have here. And I know the devil's always going to be in the details, but let's just say we want to go after the baby boomer since that's the largest segment, right? So maybe we could maybe have a loose assumption that we might find at least more qualified people there. What are some of the things that we need to be concerned about if we do want to tap into that largest segment right now?
Megan? Dad, you want to answer that?
Well, you want me to answer that?
You go, Dad.
Why don't I go first and you can follow up, because I'm sure we both have different things to say about it. I would say first you want to ask some probing questions to make sure to understand why the baby boomer wants to come to work for you. Is it that she's changing careers and looking for a new opportunity and a new place to go in her life? Is it that she or he just needs a job because they got laid off or they've retired and they're bored?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you want to sort of probe them to find out what their motivation is so that you get the best ones who really want to contribute.
Right.
And I would want to know about their history. And also just take it a step further besides baby boomers. And there's a lot of traditional still out in the workplace. There's 8% in the workplace, but there's folks out there that as a small business can tap into. Our accountant is retired and is in her getting close to 80, and she's terrific, and she just comes out twice a week to do our books, and she's been with us for a long time. So I think there's lots of folks, either boomers or traditionals, who are retiring but don't want to retire completely. So that's a great market to tap into because of the experience they have.
Sounds like it would be. And you mentioned earlier that there is a challenge there, though, when it comes to technology. I would imagine that a lot of our listeners today, we have businesses that rely a lot on technology. Megan, can you speak to the issue of training the baby boomer workforce to come up to speed?
Well, I think one of the big mistakes, and my dad and I mention this when we're talking to audiences, is that we assume that baby boomers aren't interested in technology. And, Dad, I'm trying to remember the quote. Was it the CEO of Best Buy? Was that who had the quote?
Yeah,
I mean, the CEO of Best Buy had a quote of he's being interviewed. He said, "It always amazes me when people assume baby boomers aren't interested in technology." He said, "You know, baby boomers are interested in learning how to make their lives simpler and easier." And he said the iPad got a lot of flack when it first came out because some techie snob said it's just a big iPhone, and his response was, "What's the problem with that?" So I think we don't want to assume that baby boomers aren't interested in technology, because I definitely think they are. But if you're training them to do something new with technology, I would suggest try training them one-on-one. It's especially when it comes to things like technology, it has been found that an older learner or more mature learner tends to learn better one-on-one when learning something new like that versus in a classroom setting. So if you got your baby boomer or someone from the traditional generation learning about a new system on your computer, a new program, I suggest training a one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. And Larry, you mentioned that one of the biggest questions you want to ask is why it is that they're looking. And now,
yeah.
In a general sense, you kind of want to know that. That helps you get to know a person. But are there any work-related things, performance-related things that that answer might sort of point out for you or tend to infer?
Well,
And let me tell you why I'm asking, because I've read many times over the past few months that people who are not employed are not getting hired. And it's not because they're not qualified. It's simply because they're not currently employed. So are there valid assumptions that we can make because of that?
That they're unemployable because they're not employed?
Yeah, there are so many people that are unemployed, and the data that I'm reading is saying that in the pool of job applicants, the people who are not employed are not getting hired, period. They're just getting totally looked over, and that seemed a bit unfair to me. So I guess my question is there something to not being not having a job for I think it was 6 months. If you've been unemployed for 6 months, it's kind of like this magic number that means, you know, your chances of getting any job that you're qualified for decrease significantly. So I mean, I've just been reading that. I haven't read the studies like you guys have. So if that's flawed data, please point it out. But if that's what you're finding, as we are talking with small business owners about hiring, should we follow that, or are there reasons we should or shouldn't, you know, use that as a guideline?
I think that's a pretty harsh generalization to say, well, this person's not qualified because they've been unemployed for a year. I think there's a lot of good reasons why people haven't been employed for a year in this economy. And
I thought it was, too. But
so you're passing up a whole lot of great talent, I think, by making that assumption. I would never want to make that assumption at all. I'm interested in what the person has done and what potential they have and what they can do and what their attitude is. That's basically the only three things I'm interested in when I hire people.
But I do agree with you. Dawn, I do agree with you that it's sort of like if a house has been on the market for a long time, people are suspicious. Why has this house been on the market for a long time? If a candidate's been looking for a long time, I think people are suspicious. And that I agree with my dad, that's a mistake as an employer. You want to take a look at it. But if you're someone out there looking for a job, you might want to look at, and again, the economy is terrible right now, or it's getting better, but it's, you know, not what it was a couple of years ago. But if you're looking for a job, you definitely want to be, and you're still looking months and months later, you want to look at your resume. Is it as up to date? How do you physically look? We've done several interviews about, you know, being a little bit older, out looking for a job. How do you physically look when you're coming into the job? You want to examine those things that you're doing while you're looking for the job, obviously, too. Just like if a house were on the market for too long, you need to look at how do I need to freshen up a house.
It's a really good analogy. I'm glad you mentioned that. Because, like I said, I didn't think it sounded fair, but I've read it a couple of times. And, you know, Megan, it sort of makes me think about something else as well. When you're hiring across these different generations here, what sorts of things are you noticing when it comes to the differences in attitudes between younger people who may be more qualified technologically and then the baby boomer workforce who may be less qualified technologically but may bring a different kind of attitude that a business that really wants to grow may have? Can you comment on that?
Well, the younger generation, and just part of it is being a little bit, because they're younger, is the younger generation tends to have a little bit more flexibility when it comes to moving, because many of them don't have families or they don't have a spouse that needs to worry about their job. So they tend to be a little bit more flexible about moving, relocating, and a little flexible. I know I've talked to many young college graduates who are just eager to take anything, you know, doesn't matter what the paycheck is. compared to some of the more mature generation where they have more obligations and it's a little harder for them to move or be that kind of flexible. And again, if you're in the category of the mature generation and moving is not an option or relocating is not an option, you want to be prepared when you go into that interview with what you bring to the party. So if you think they're going to ask you to move and moving is an option, you better have a really good list of reasons why you could and how you would make it possible to work from your home location. Maybe you've investigated that you could go back and forth to the other city maybe twice a month and how that would fit within the company's budget. So you just want to be prepared with that kind of stuff before you go into the interview.
Larry, what are you seeing in the contractor arena? Are you seeing that any one of these different generational pockets, so to speak, are more or less interested in working on a contract basis as opposed to on a traditional employer-employee basis?
We're seeing that two groups are kind of moving more into contractual areas. Generation X seem to be, from what we're seeing, and we haven't done a formal study on it, so it's just kind of our observations that Generation X, those folks about in their 30s or so, tend to have an independent spirit that makes them open to starting their own business and kind of doing their own thing. Baby boomers who are retiring are looking for opportunities to do something new, and so they're looking for ways to maybe work as an independent contractor. We know several baby boomers who have retired from their big company or their organization and then come back as an independent contractor, kind of like a lot of military people do when they get their 20 years in and then come back and work for the government as an independent contractor. In general, and this is, of course, these are huge generalizations, but that's mm-hmm. what looking at generations is about, is making huge generalizations where there's all kinds of individual exceptions. But in general, what we're seeing with Gen Yers, the folks that are in their 20s, is that they, more than their predecessors, Gen Xers and Boomers, they are looking for the issues of security and benefits and pay. And we in the book, we kind of attribute that to the way they were raised. They have been parented in a way that was different than, say, I was. I was raised by traditional parents who basically said, there's a point where you get out of the house and get on your own, and we don't want to see you around here anymore, except on Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Gen Yers are still living at home. Mm-hmm. And they're very close to their families. Megan, you quoted some statistics on boomers versus Yers on their attitude
towards
parents,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, according to a Gallup poll, 90% of Generation Y report being very close to parents. Now, compare that to 1974, 40% of baby boomers said they'd be better off without their parents. So it is that this younger generation is remaining very close to their parents, and the parents, one or both parents, they are sort of like confidants and also sort of their mentors at home. And I think people make the mistake, they assume that the younger generation cannot think for themselves. That's not accurate. The younger generation has built a network of people, be it their parents, their friends, their teachers, a network of people that they go to bounce ideas off, to discuss things with, and help them make the best decision. And in an employment situation, younger generation, they're often looking for that same network and that same feeling of that when I come to work for you, there's somebody there that I can depend on, that if I have a question, I can go bounce some ideas off, that I can get feedback from. And if you're looking to employ younger people, that's where you want to look at your own environment and say, okay, is in my environment, are we creating an environment that a Generation Y person can come in and not only learn from us, but get feedback from us? And also, is it an environment where they're gonna be able to connect with people and feel that they're not sort of out there swimming on their own?
And Larry, you just mentioned an interesting point as well. You said that the Generation Xers, or did you say Generation Yers? Maybe I can't remember which one. was interested in starting their own businesses, so they might be more interested in contract work. Can you comment a little bit on how, as the employer or the contractor who's got the work, how people in that position and small businesses, a lot of us are in that position, how we help make all of that work smoothly together? Because if we are using the services of someone on a part-time contractor basis and they also have their own business, are there any things that we need to be aware of, any things that we can proactively try to put in place to make sure that there's an understanding and that there is that there is no unwanted overlap between those two different types of work, which may actually use some of the same equipment to get done? They may be using the same computer to grow their business as they are doing work with you.
Yeah, and in that case, I'm thinking in our own case, we have contractors that work for us in doing program development, and we share various things like schedules, and they're put into the cloud. You know, we use a Mac system, and so the schedules are in the Apple cloud so that everybody can access them, and we can work then with them almost as if they're employees. It's just that we have to respect that their schedule is independent, and so I just can't say I want you to do this and this and this by this date. I have to sort of inquire to say, are you available? Which is part of the arrangement. On the other hand, I don't have to pay them unless they're working. So there's a trade-off there, and as opposed to having them as an employee.
Right.
And for our business, that works very well. But it does require that you kind of they're sort of part of the family, but they're aunts and uncles and cousins. They're not the inner family.
Right, and I would think that this does require a little bit of maneuvering that there really isn't a playbook for. I mean, because this is kind of new that people are maybe running a very small business on their own, maybe you would say on the side, except it's not on the side because maybe they don't have a job. So
yeah.
Kind of having a business and finding some contract work to supplement that, and that is, I think, such a fairly new phenomenon that, you know, working with that and dealing with, you know, how to get along in those situations, how to respect that person's privacy and that person's ability to build their own thing while still making sure that without turning them into an employee, you do what you have to do to make sure that work gets done. Do you see challenges there, and do you have any tips for helping people handle that?
Well, I think you have to be willing to be flexible with them,
mm-hmm.
and also be very clear about what your expectations are, and I say that with some pain in my voice because I'm not very good at it. I'm not a really good planner, the way my daughter is. She plans things out to the nth, whereas I just sort of go with the flow. So I sometimes drive our contractors crazy because I call at the last minute and say, hey, I need this done. I need this little project. Can and I need it by Friday. You don't have a problem with that, do you? But they've learned to say, yeah, I do. Whereas
okay,
Megan
so
will have it all planned out,
that
there's no misunderstanding or snafus.
That's only because I'm not a planner. I'm a control freak. That's really the truth.
Well, you know, it sounds like the two of you have, I mean, I think it's fascinating. You're obviously a family business, and you've managed to figure out how to, work together and make, you know, Larry, you've got certain propensities toward, as you just described, and Megan has other ones, and so you can minimize any adverse impact on your business by Larry not being a planner, by having Megan be a planner or control freak, whichever I had to call her. So that's pretty good. So when we're talking about getting along, you know, what if do you find any issues associated with people in the workforce who are managing people that are, you know, old enough to be their grandparents? Right? When I say this, I'm thinking about, you think about organizations like Google, where one of the founders who is, I don't know, very, very young, has just, taken over the helm of the company again. It's going to be managing people way older than him. You think about someone like Mark Zuckerberg, who is, 27, 28, not even 30. only managing, you know, all this money, but really having to deal with so many different personalities and people who are, you know, three times his age. What are some of the challenges that we might face in that situation as younger business owners? What are some of the things that we need to be aware of that perhaps baby boomers, again, the biggest choice that we have, what are some of the things that we need to be aware of and sensitive to when we're working with them under those conditions?
Well, I think one thing is that you be aware that there may be a bit of an ego deflation here on the part of the boomer that he's in this situation and has to, you know, take orders from a kid. On the other hand, the kid, I think, is well served, and we cover a lot of steps in our book about how younger managers can overcome those differences. And one is to adopt an attitude that we call it the second lieutenant attitude, which is anybody that's been in the service will tell you that that second lieutenants who get out into the field right fresh out of school, they are well served to confide in and connect with somebody who is the master sergeant or who is the person who has the experience and has the grit and knows what's really going on, and can then say, I'm looking to you for your wisdom and your experience, and I really respect it, as long as we understand that I have something to bring to the party too. And I think then the other thing that a younger manager can do it really makes the difference is that you can't buy respect and you can't demand respect. You can only earn it. And so if a young manager treats boomers with respect and proves that he or she can do his, you know, hold up his end of the bargain. For example, if you're if your job is as the owner of the small business is to see that the systems are in place and that everybody gets what they need to do their jobs well and support them in their efforts, and you do that well and you kind of prove yourself, after a while those barriers start to disappear, and you start to, you know, it would probably irritate me to work for Mark Zuckerberg for a while until I knew that he respected me for who I am, and I know I would at some point very quickly respect who he is because of what he's accomplished. And as long as we treat each other as equals, we'll eventually settle in. But respect takes a while to build.
So Dad, if you were for Mark Zuckerberg, I would tell him that you unfriended me on Facebook.
That was a mistake.
Which
I will never live down.
He keeps saying it was a mistake. I don't think it was.
Well, I'm sure, you know, you need to friend your daughter, Larry, okay? So.
Yeah, I've refriended her.
We'll just leave it at that. But, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned this because we're in our last few minutes, but, you know, it boils down to relationships, right? You treat people right. You show that you're doing your job, and you develop the relationship that makes the working relationship sustainable and therefore the business sustainable. Is that so much of it boils down to that. And, you know, I do have to say that your book does a fantastic job of not just sort of setting forth that as a principle, but also giving some really good examples of, you know, some real-life work examples of people in different situations, tips to handle someone who is dealing with this situation at work because of, you know, a personal situation or people in different age groups. Really useful tips.
Oh, good.
So I encourage people to make sure they check this out. Give us your website address again so we can know where to go.
The website is geninkbook.com. So that's GeninkBook.com, geninkbook.com.
Well, Megan and Larry Johnson will be checking you out there at geninkbook.com. Thank you so much for joining us today on Indie Business Podcast. We'll see you guys next week. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
Thank you.
Thank you.